Welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. This week we're going to be talking about Toro, our new adopted rat that we got. We're going to talk a little bit about some ratty crafting things, and we're going to talk about some video games that Matt and I are currently playing. So here we go.
Welcome, everybody. This is episode 5 of The Nerdy Rat. It is May the 1st, 2017.
Yes, we made it to May. Hard to believe in some ways that April is already over.
Yep. Yesterday, wait, was it yesterday or the day before? It was my birthday.
The day before.
Saturday was my birthday.
Yes, happy birthday.
Yay. So, we wanted to talk about our new... our foster. He was our foster for what, 3 days?
Less than 3 days. Yeah. So, did we talk last time about adopting Fievel and Peter? I think we did, right?
I feel like we did. But if we didn't, just a quick recap. We adopted Fievel and Peter.
And they were our last two foster boys that we had. And Fievel was the...
to 8.
Yeah, Fievel was the semi-hairless one, and Peter's the Rex with the curly hair.
Yeah, he kind of looked like Athena.
Athena, yeah. So we did talk about that, I think, last week.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. And
so this week, Small Angels, our coordinator, Teresa, asked if we could foster another boy who had been on his own as a rat since he was 9 weeks old. He had been living with humans, but he didn't have any other rat companions. And we've talked about before how important it is for rats to have companions.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a thing like they intended to get him a companion, and it just never happened. And eventually the person who was taking care of him decided that the best thing would be to give him up so he could be with other rats. So
So he's about a year old at this point now. Remember, we had just lost Athena. And Mama Liz has a big heart for little traumatized animals. And I fell in love with him before we even got him. When I heard his story, I was like, oh, I want to adopt him. And Matt was like, well, we already have 8 rats. And I was like, I know, but I really want to. But so at first the rescue thought they could pair him up with another single male, but then that boy's foster parents decided they wanted to adopt him.
Well, I was kind of pushing for that because I didn't want to go over 8 rats in our Critter Nation cage. And there was another boy, Noodles, who was also by himself. And the plan was to introduce them to and then adopt them out as a pair.
Mm-hmm. And if that had worked out, I would have been fine with that because I didn't want Noodles to be alone either. But when his parents decided to adopt him, I was like, I have to have this rat. I love him. And also, I think just having seen like Athena be so happy with all the rats that she got to live with for the last couple months of her life, I know Toro's going to be so happy living with a pack, especially when he's never had that.
And he seems to really want it too. He was he seemed pretty excited meeting Peter and Fievel. We haven't introduced him to any of the girls yet because he won't be spayed until Friday.
Yeah, neutered.
And we don't want to, until Friday. Yeah. And we don't want to introduce him to any of the girls until we've had a chance to do that. So
yeah, but he's
a really sweet. He's like hooded. He kind of reminds me of Carly with the little.
He does. He's got like a little white streak on his hood, and but he just seemed so sad and depressed when he first came to us. So at first he was kind of shy. So I was snuggling him a lot with that bonding pouch that I had made, which I talked about, I think in episode 0, I might've talked about that. So I'll post a link for the pattern for that again. But,
we had talked about those in the first episode.
Yeah.
So good.
The bonding pouch. Yeah. It's just like, you know, it's like a little fabric pocket that you hang around your neck so your ratties can snuggle with you. And for Toro, especially, I think because he's only known human interaction, it really helped him the first couple of days to feel safe and secure. And it's actually making me really happy because now when I snuggle with him, he won't even stay in the pouch the whole time. He likes to go explore now. He's getting a little braver, which is good because he's starting to do more of those ratty behaviors that he should be doing, you know?
It was really cute last night when you had both him and Peter and they were both Peter just wanted to snuggle in the hammock. And
Peter was sleepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Toro would like snuggle with Peter a little bit, but then like he'd go out and explore. And every time he went out to explore, Peter would look up at me, and he looks like Athena, remember? He's a, what is it called, a Siamese, when they've got that little
either,
thing on their
either
nose?
Either Siamese or there's another thing that they call them.
Okay, I can't remember, but he's got like a little gray spot on his
nose.
Yeah,
he looks like a Siamese cat, basically. Yeah. With the little dark spot
on his nose, which is how Athena looked. So every time Toro would go off to explore, Peter would look up at me from the pouch and he'd be like, "Mommy, I want Toro to come back. I want him to snuggle me." And he was so cute. And he just looked like little Athena. And I just kind of felt like Athena was happy that we had adopted all these extra ratties now that she's passed on. Because I think it's making her.
She would have wanted it that way.
She absolutely would have. She would be so happy that other rats are getting the same chance to have a family that she had. So.
Yeah. But I... Yeah, this will be the most rats we've ever had, but I'm excited. I think they'll be good together. I just have to make sure to keep the cage clean, because mm-hmm. the more rats you have, the more often you have to clean your cage.
Right. But to be honest, I mean, between 8 and 9, it's not that much difference.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say we'll go over 9.
Yeah, I would never want to go over 9.
No. Now, the Critter Nation technically can hold 12, but as Matt has said before, we like them to have extra room to run around and stuff.
Well, 12 according to the calculator. And the calculator is like, it's a good bait. Like, I would use that as my upper limit, but some people will go over that. And rats are really good at adopting to overcrowding, which is... I still don't think you would ever want to overcrowd rats, but they can deal with it. The cage is big enough, and we get them out of it from time to time. So
right to play.
I think, yeah.
Oh, why don't you tell him what Toro's been doing with his shark? Because Athena had a little stuffed shark.
Yeah, we gave him the shark because we didn't know if it might help him feel less lonely. But he's been dragging it in and out of his. out of his igloo with him.
Yeah. I feel like he's making it kind of like the alpha rat, because he'll drag it into the igloo and have it block the door, which is usually what the alpha rat does to protect the pack. So
like, you hang out here and watch the door.
He's
Mr.
like, you
shark.
Guard me, shark. It's so cute. Because it's a little stuffed shark that's about the same size as a rat. So.
Yeah. I don't know how much that really helps when you have a single rat. When I had Hannah, my first two rats before I started fostering were Hannah and Sarah, and I lost Sarah, and it was just Hannah left, and I didn't, didn't have plans to get more rats at the time, so I got her a little stuffed bunny. I don't think she cared for it that much, but she liked the interaction with people. She actually calmed down a lot after Sarah passed away, because she was a little bitey, but that kind of calmed down after Sarah passed away.
Yeah.
But it's always rough. It's a hard decision when you lose a rat and you're left with one, because you're not always prepared to get more rats and...
Yeah, you don't always know quite what to do. Well, why don't you talk about Milo on Marty Mouse, because that brings us to that.
If you don't follow Marty Mouse House on Facebook, you absolutely should. And if you've never heard, Marty Mouse is a rat that became kind of famous. His parents are photographers, and they just took the most adorable pictures of him. And Marty was originally a solo rat by himself. I think he had, I don't think he got along with other rats or something. I'm not exactly sure, but after he passed, they adopted Fibs, Milo, and
Wembley,
yeah. And Wembley passed a little bit ago, and then Milo passed this past week, and they had some really cute posts about him.
Posts. Cute, but oh my gosh.
Yeah, but if you're not following Marty Mouse House, absolutely you should be, because he is doing, their whole family does so much for the image of rats, because they just take the most adorable pictures of them.
Like, they pose them like with little miniatures, and they're professional photographers, and then they have the rats. They call him Marty Mouse, by the way, but he's a rat, so don't get confused
Well, they explain that on the FAQ on his website. They say Marty Mouse is just his name. Like Michael J. Fox is not an actual fox.
Okay. Yes, but don't, for people who don't know Marty Mouse, don't get confused, because it's a rat website.
Check out their site for sure. Follow them on Facebook, because they put up adorable pictures of of Milo Wimbley.
Yeah, and like all the rats narrate the pictures in their own little ratty voices and stuff. Yeah, they had this whole really cute.
They had these cute little storylines, like where Phibbs was running for president and stuff.
Yeah,
and it's just really adorable, and I just love everything about this family.
Yeah,
because they really do care so much about their rats. And. And they were like, you know, we stayed up with him all night and smothered him in love and gave him all the medicine we could give him. But, you know, the sickness took him.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's how it is. Like, especially with rats, there's limited amount of things you can do and there's limited amount of medications you can give them.
And I mean, the truth is at some point, like every pet, they're going to get ready to pass. And, you just have to decide what to do.
Like, really, the only two antibiotics that work for rats, as far as I know, are the doxycycline and the Baytrol.
Yeah.
If your vet is not prescribing those for your rats, they may not be that familiar with rats because those are really the only two that are really very effective for rats.
Mm-hmm. And then for pain, Medicam is big one for pain.
Yeah. What was
like
that
after surgery?
What was that one that the one vet gave us that was,
it wasn't good. I can't remember, but it was
I don't remember. It was an injectable one that they gave us and it
gave her like hallucinations and she just slept all day and she wasn't happy on it.
Yeah. It just makes rats like hallucinate and like, I've had our vet tell us that like rats on the stuff will just start eating their hammocks and just,
or themselves, like they'll chew on themselves. So yeah. The only reason we kept her on it because our coordinator had kind of cautioned against it, but we were worried because this was little Doreen who kept pulling out her stitches, and we were like, well, if it'll make her sleep for a couple days, so she leaves the stitches alone, maybe we should do it for a couple days. Yeah. So we did.
Yeah, it's really important to have an experienced rat vet because you've got to get them on the right medicines. And,
Toro! He was trying to climb out of his hammock to the door.
Was climbing, he was in his hammock and he was trying to
get to the wall.
Get to the wall, and he just
did a somersault.
Kind of somersaulted over.
He hung on to the hammock and did a somersault.
Yeah, I was watching him too.
Me too. He's talking. A silly little boy. Aww. I love him. I'm so happy we're going to get him. And he's already seems so much happier that he gets to play with Peter every day and have some snuggle time with another rat. Like, that just makes me so happy that he's feeling so much love now from other rats. And he's kind of knowing that now that he's getting that every day. And then after his neuter on Friday, after he heals up from that a little bit, we'll start introducing him to the girls. And we'll see how that goes.
Yep.
And before you know it, probably before our next podcast, he'll be in the big cage.
Yeah, so we spent some money this past week, and you picked up the grommet press.
Yes.
For the hammocks.
So I've talked before about making our own ratty hammocks, and actually I'm working on a pattern, which I'll try to finish this week so we can post it on the website if you want to sew your own rat hammocks. But the problem I had was that you need to put grommets in the corners, and by the time you finish sewing the hammocks, there's so many layers of fabric that the little hand grommet. So a grommet, okay, if you don't know what a grommet is, a lot of people do, but just in case you don't, it's like a little metal washer that goes in the corner so that the fabric doesn't fray when you hang it up. So, and the way you put it in is you just get this little tool. And if your fabric is thin, you can get this little tool like at Joann Fabrics that's just like a squeeze hand one. It's kind of like a hole punch.
That
and you
thing
just,
is so hard to use on these hammocks.
Oh, my gosh.
I was doing it for you, and it was
because
like,
I couldn't do it. That there's so many layers of fabric.
And you'd have to like pre-cut a little hole, too, just to even get the grommet in there.
And the press is supposed to do it for you. It's supposed to cut the fabric for you. But let me tell you, that little hand one that you get at Joann's, it doesn't cut that
many
layers of fabric.
It's like if you took like a ream of paper and then like some just regular scissors and tried to cut through all of them. It's like, yeah, you could probably do it, but it's not going to look it's not going to look
and
good.
It's going to be
and
so
it's
hard
gonna kill you.
And such a pain. So our rat coordinator from Small Angels, Teresa, I had asked for her for a recommendation because I knew she had a tabletop press. It's really heavy and sturdy. It sits on the table and then you press the lever down. And so the lever action is what gets it. It cuts it and it puts the grommets in.
You know what? One thing I've learned in my career of fixing things throughout my life is like, if you're going to do anything with any kind of, if you're going to fix stuff with any kind of regularity, like spend the money and get the right tool for the right
job. I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
It's like, yeah, you can get by with not having optimal tools, but it's just not worth it.
It's
going to
be
run.
Exactly. If you're really going to do stuff with the tools, you're going to get like, so frustrated. It's not going to do the job well.
Yeah. I used to try and fix my car with like just a set of wrenches basically and like, you know, trying to change brakes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just like,
yeah,
it felt like such a hill to climb, just changing like your brakes. But like when you get like the right tools to do it, you're like done and you're like done like that. And it's like, oh my God, that was so easy. Why didn't,
and that's exactly how I felt with this tabletop press. So what I had to do was get the actual, grommet press. And then you buy the dies separately. So you buy one cutting die to cut the hole and then you get a size bigger for the grommet, and the grommets and the die that attaches the grommets.
So could you get different dies and use
you
it for
can.
Other stuff?
You can get different sizes of the dies and use it
cool.
for all kinds
and
of
they're all
stuff.
Grommets or do they have other uses too?
No, it's just the cutting die and the grommets. That's all it is.
Okay, well that's
but
cool though. So
and
like
especially for me if I do a lot with the rat hammocks. You know, so I will say the press itself and then the two dies, the cutting die and the grommet die, and then I got 500 grommets. That was $200, which is okay. That might seem like a lot. But when you consider that I'm sewing all of the rat hammocks and how quickly they go through them because they chew them up and stuff, you know?
I mean, if you bought these from somebody, that'd be like $10 or $15 a hammock.
Yeah, and that's how much our coordinator sells them for.
Yeah, and the rats really do go through them. Like, I try and use them as long as I can, but eventually they get to a point where they're really unusable.
And I guess the thing is, it's cheaper to make them yourself than it is to keep buying them from somebody, you know, especially for us when we have so many rats and we have the foster rats too. And, you know, and plus I like sewing and then we get to buy the superhero fabrics because I think I've mentioned before Joanne Fabrics has like the superhero fleeces and flannels and video games and Star Wars and,
yeah, and you
comics.
You can catch a lot of that stuff on sale.
Exactly. You get it on sale and then, you know, so for me, it was worth it to finally get this grommet press because when I tried it for the first time, baby, it cut like butter. It was like not even butter, like butter that's been sitting out on the counter for 3 hours. Like, oh my goodness, it cut through those layers of hammock like it was nothing there. And it didn't even take like any hand pressure at all. So I am so happy I got this. So it's from Clips Shop. And the one I got is the BGTEP XL. So we're going to post a link for that on the site.
Yeah, and we're going to put a link to Marty Mouse.
Yeah, we'll have links for all this stuff.
Everything
Marty Mouse.
Will always, like all links for all stuff we talk about will always be in
we'll
the show
notes.
We'll
always have it there.
So always check that out. It's at the, if you go to the nerdyrat.com, you'll have each episode will have extensive show notes for it. So.
Yep. So that was my crafting happiness this week because now I actually had like a backlog to pile. Well, you know, because our cat Kitten has been taking naps on the ratty hammocks that I have finished sewn, but they didn't have grommets in them because it got to be such a pain to put the grommets in.
Now I'm finally getting to catch up.
Yeah, Toro really likes his shark. So he'll like carry it around the cage with him and he'll like hang out with it. But like we said, it's better for him to have real rats. But we were just thinking like, well, in the meantime, until we get him neutered, maybe this will help a little bit.
Yeah, just give him something to interact with during the day. So Friday he'll be neutered and then hopefully we can introduce him shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
So that'll be good.
Yep.
Yeah, we have to take some pictures of
Our
rats.
Oh, yeah, we should post pictures of our rats.
Maybe we'll just put them on our Twitter or something. The Nerdy Rat is our Twitter handle.
And on Facebook. We can put some on Facebook,
too. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Remember all of our social media accounts that we have.
Everything is basically the Nerdy Rat. We're on
Twitter, Facebook. I think that's it.
I made a Reddit account in that name. I made a Twitch account in that name.
Oh, my. So. But are we even updating all those?
No, but I just made them to reserve the name. If we ever do decide to do like a live podcast in the future, we can do it on Twitch.
Oh, okay. But, All right.
I just wanted to go reserve the name when we started. Because nobody, there wasn't a Gmail with the Nerdy Rat or a Twitter. So I was like,
let's catch it.
I actually came up with something original. So I'm going to
Yes.
Make accounts for everything I can think of.
That's right. That's right. But, so that someday when we're the Marty Mouse house.
Yeah, if you guys ever have any.
And this is our full-time business.
Yeah. If you ever have questions for us or comments or stories, you please email them to thenerdyrat@gmail.com and we will respond to them.
Yeah, we'd love to talk about it on air. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you want to talk about some nerdy stuff?
Yeah, let's talk about Well, let's move on.
Oh, you know what? We don't have local animal news, but why don't you tell them what Kitten did last night when we were worried about him? This will be our local animal news is about our cat, who, by the way, his name is Kitten.
I was on the computer.
Mm-hmm. And I had gone to bed already. I was already upstairs in bed.
And I'm playing a game with my friends on the computer, and I hear this like this howl, and I know it's his, there's another cat I want to kill, meow.
Oh, now see, I didn't know what it was because I was upstairs, but I can hear through the vents, the air vents, I can hear what's going on. So yeah. I heard and I was like, wait a second, is that on Matt's game? And then I was like, no, I think that's my baby. And I was like, is he throwing up? Is he sick? No. Is he hurt? Is he stuck? So I come running downstairs.
That's definitely I do not like this other cat.
Yes,
I've heard other cats make this noise before.
Oh, okay. Well, Matt called it because that's absolutely what it was.
I go out there and the black cat is right outside the window and Kitten's right there. He's like his tail's all puffed up.
Oh, yeah, like a raccoon.
Yeah.
So this black cat is either a feral cat or it's been abandoned. We can't tell. We've tried to catch it a couple times and we haven't been able to. I've seen him in a couple of weeks, I think. Well, and it's possible he's an outdoor cat. But I don't know. I mean, he's outdoors all the time, and it was the middle of the night, so he's probably living in the wild.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's probably feral at this point. I mean, he doesn't act like anybody's cat.
No, and I've tried to call him a couple times, and he's just run away. So
yeah, I think he's gotten into fights with some of the other cats. Mm-hmm. I know he was getting into fights with TC.
Yeah, the cat
who was a cat that we rescued that just came right up to Liz, and we.
Yeah, that one was clearly a pet that had been abandoned because she was, first of all, so clean and sleek and pretty. She was not spayed. So she's an unspayed cat, about a year old. She was outside
the neighborhood.
Well, it was like 10:30 at night. So if she was an outdoor cat, I feel like she would have been back inside at that point.
I wonder if somebody just didn't want her anymore and just put her out.
Because, I kind of feel like that.
Because I had never seen her out in the neighborhood really before.
Well, and the thing is, so I came home and she was sitting right by the sidewalk. And at first I was like, what is that? Is that a raccoon? So I went up to it slowly, cautiously, and I saw it was a cat. And so I called her over and I was like, you know, let me see if she comes up to me so then I'll know if she's feral or not. And she came right up to me, rubbing her head on me. You know, she came and sat in my lap. She let me pick her up. And I'm like, I'm not leaving this baby out here. Yeah. So I took her in the house. Now, I was going to put her in the separate room so Kitten wouldn't mess with her. But before I could even do that, Kitten comes into the house. I was like, oh, Kitten, look who I have. But I wasn't going to, like, you know, let them interact or anything. Oh my gosh. Kitten turned into like a wild thing. He screamed. He jumped at my arms. He chased her all around the house. He didn't catch her. And he chased her into the room I was going to put her in anyway. So I yelled at Kitten. I got him out of the room because he did listen to me because I'm his mommy. He got out of the room and then TC was all upset. But, you know, she wasn't happy, but we were able to take her to the shelter later that night and she calmed down once she got away from Kitten. And
we we paid for her spay to help her get adopted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I paid her adoption fee. And what I did is I called, it was the PG County Animal Shelter. And I called and asked them, you know, if I could sponsor her adoption fees to help her get adopted quicker. And, you know, they actually don't hold cats very long before they put them down because they can't. Because, you know, and again, it's more humane to put them in the shelter. Because remember, this was an unspayed female cat about a year old. She would have started having babies. All those kittens would have been out in the wild dying.
If she had been out increasing the feral another population, day, she probably would have been pregnant.
Exactly.
Because of that one. Exactly. I'm pretty sure that's a boy, the black one.
The black one, yeah. So, I mean, you know, don't feel like it's a bad thing to take a cat to a shelter. But because I loved her and I rescued her and she was so sweet, I really wanted her to get adopted.
Yeah.
So they were able to get her into a no-kill rescue, which was actually the Fredericksburg SPCA. And even though that's SPCA, they happen to be a no-kill shelter at that one. So she got in, and because I paid her adoption fees, she actually got adopted like within 2 months. And yeah. So she has her forever family, and I'm so happy it worked out well for her.
Yeah.
They wouldn't tell me details, but they said she went to a loving home, and that made me very happy.
If you're ever if you can't keep an animal, take it to a shelter. If you're that concerned about it being put down, you can
offer some money that will help it get adopted, to help pay for stuff, but that is so much more caring than just abandoning a pet out in the wild.
I don't want to get into it.
I know we've had previous episodes where we get into it, but so anyway Kitten saw the black cat, which is we think is feral and which is still out there, and he was so upset. So when I came down, Matt was like, yeah, he saw that cat.
He ran off at that point.
The outdoor cat ran off.
The black cat ran off and Kitten called. Because
Kitten likes to sit right in the window in the laundry room. So.
Well, he's got to guard his house.
Apparently he does, because those feral cats can come right up to the window. He was mad. He was mad. I was like, it's okay, Kitten. We don't want any cats but our kitten. He's not coming in this house.
I tried to pet him afterwards. He was like, rawr. He was like, okay, kid, you need to calm down.
I talked him down a little bit, and then he let me pet him. He's like, all right, mommy.
All right, well, let's
move on to some nerdy stuff. So what games have you been playing lately, babe? You got a new one for your birthday. I believe somebody got you one.
Yes, I did, actually. You got me Hollow Knight.
Uh-huh. Now tell me about that one, because, see, he put it on his Steam wish list, so I knew he wanted it. So tell me about it.
So it's fairly new. It came out a couple. I just saw something about it a couple months ago, but it's a 2D side-scrolling. I guess they call it Metroidvania. It's like the type of game that it is. It's like Metroid and Castlevania, where you basically you explore a map.
Okay.
And you look for upgrades to your character, and you get upgrades for your character, and those allow you to access different areas that you weren't. Uh-huh. Sometimes you'll do backtracking.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fun.
But it's really cool. It's got a really good art style. It's all hand-drawn animation. That's cool. It just looks really cool. It kind of reminds me a little bit of. What was that? The Tim Burton Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, okay.
It kind of looks a little bit like that, but it's really cool. It's a little challenging, which I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want stuff to be too easy, but you also don't want it to be too frustrating.
I get frustrated with a lot of games these days, just because I feel like they are just way, 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 way too easy. Mm. And it's like you're just basically playing through a long movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But this is actually like the first boss character I came up against actually killed me the first time, because I wasn't really ready. But it's really cool. It looks really good.
And what's the storyline? Like, who are the characters and what are you trying to do? And
I don't pay that much attention to the story a lot of times, but it's kind of real artistic. It doesn't explicitly give you a lot of backstory. It's like this little dark world and this. Mm-hmm. And basically, I'm only in the first world, and it seems like the goal is to rescue all these little slug guys that live in this town, because you keep fighting these.
Oh, okay.
You fight these bosses, and then all these little slug guys are captured. In these little jars, and you break the jar, and they're like, and then they go back to their town, and if you go back to the town, they'll throw coins at you.
Or
shells is the money in the game.
Okay.
And
that's cool.
Thank you for rescuing them or whatever. So I think I've got two more that I need to rescue in this first town, and I think I'll probably move on to the next area after that. Cool. But it's really cool. It's like the enemies are all these beetle looking things. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
But no, I'm enjoying it. I that's why I wanted it, because I really like Metroidvania type of games. One of my favorite games of all time is Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which is one of the first really, really good type of game like this.
Now, I still need to play that one. That one, I've seen it on the speed runs when we watch the games done quick.
If you ever want to play it, I've got it on Xbox.
I will play it. Yes,
it's really good. Play it, actually, that's the one. Alucard is the son of Dracula. And you got to kill Dracula. It's really good.
Yeah, it looks really fun. I would love to play that.
And it's got a really good soundtrack too.
The music was good.
Hollow Knight has a really good soundtrack too. It's original, like, kind of orchestral music. It's very what's the word?
I don't know.
It's like, has a really good atmosphere to it. Whole game, like, kind of has this really good aesthetic.
Yeah.
And that's, it works cool. really good with the music and everything. I really enjoyed it. I knew as soon as I saw it, I was like, I want to get this game because this game looks...
And it was affordable. It was $15. And it wasn't even on sale. That was just the normal price. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really...
That looks cool. I might end up with that game too, but I think first I'll do the Castlevania one.
Yeah, it's so pretty good. A lot of people have been doing... Like, a lot of these games have been like what's called roguelike, where... Uh-huh. You basically, every time you die, you start over.
Oh.
And I feel like those are kind of, like, those games are popular because they're easy for devs to make because they're all procedurally generated.
Uh-huh.
But this is more a traditional exploration Castlevania style game. I think it's great. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, you got me that, and I played that a little bit. And the other game,
Let me talk about my game I'm playing.
Do you want to go back and forth and then?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's take turns.
Okay.
So, one of the Steam games that I got that I really liked, I finished it already, but it was on sale. It was this little puzzle game. I'm trying to find the name of it. It was called The Tiny Bang Story. So it was on sale for like $2. It's only normally $5.
Tiny Bang Story?
The Tiny Bang. Like, instead of the Big Bang, it's the Tiny Bang.
Tiny Bang.
The Tiny Bang Story. So it's kind of like a hidden object game, but it's got puzzles too, like brain puzzles. And it's got like a little world that you go through. So instead of just being like a freeze frame where you have to find X number of objects, it's like you have to find the objects in order to get unlock the puzzle, and then in the puzzle you have to figure out the brain teaser stuff to do it. And it was kind of similar to what you're saying with Hollow Knight. It was really gorgeous soundtrack, gorgeous art. It was a lot of fun to play. There was a couple puzzles where I got really frustrated and I had to Google the walkthrough, but other than that, it was pretty awesome. But my only disappointment was that it was a 5 hour long game and then I was done. And
what,
I had beaten
what
it.
Did you play this on? Was this on the Wii?
Steam.
Oh, no, it's on Steam. Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah, no, it's that one I was playing on my computer for a while. But yeah, it was short, and that's my only thing that makes me sad because I loved it so much. Like, I wish there really had been like 25 more levels because I would have liked to do that much more of it because it was just a fun game.
It is for $5. It's still
for
not
five
bad.
Bucks. Well, and I got it for $2. So let me tell you, I have no complaints.
Yeah, I'm looking
and
at
for $5, no, that's not bad at all. But it was just so much fun. I'm like, oh, I hope they make another one. I hope they make a sequel.
It's got really good reviews on
Steam.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe enough people pick it up, more people will get it.
Yeah.
It does look pretty good. Like, the artwork looks pretty good.
The artwork, it's kind of like what you're saying with your game, too. It's kind of like this hand-drawn artwork. And it's just kind of like they created this whole little world where, like, I don't know, they've kind of made stuff out of trash. And there was, like, a rocket explosion on their world or something like that. Yeah. So...
Yeah. I think it's great that, like, we live in a time where, like, games can be purely hand-drawn and it's not, like, because, like, back in the day when we were, like, younger.
Yeah.
Like, games were really, the artists were kind of having to work within the boundaries of the platform.
The
system that they were coding the game on.
Exactly.
So the kind of art was, like, kind of an afterthought.
And it was, like, you had to start with the pixelated stuff. Oh, why don't you speak about our Atari?
Oh, yeah.
Atari. It's actually my Atari, but I shared it with Matt.
The last present I got for my birthday, she was like, this is really for both of us. And it was her old Atari.
Yeah, now Matt loves to collect retro games.
Yeah.
And retro gaming systems.
I used to have a much bigger collection. And when I moved up here, I basically lost all my stuff. Well, my roommates stole all my stuff, basically. So, I used to have a lot more, but I enjoy collecting like old systems and stuff and rare systems and stuff like that.
And our plan is we're remodeling our house because we bought a real fixer-upper. So when we finish remodeling the living room, we're going to be able to clear out this other small bedroom, and Matt's going to make that into like his retro gaming den.
And I've been trying to collect like older systems.
And he gets older TVs too, because you said that works better, right, with the graphics.
Well, it looks better on some of the other ones, and if you ever want to play light games, it's required, because light games don't work on new TVs because the refresh rate is wrong.
But so I was so excited because my little brother found the Atari, and I call him my little brother, he's like in his 30s, but he found the Atari for us, and it has the Mario Brothers game for Atari. It has Donkey Kong.
And
it has
the
E.T.
newer 2600. I've never seen that model before. I've always seen the classic wood panel one.
Well, and that's the one my parents used to have because they had it from the 70s, and all the games they had were like the original games for that. But that system eventually died, and so the 2600 came out in the early 80s, and they replaced it with that because they loved their Atari and wanted to be able to keep playing
it. And
we have some more sophisticated joysticks, too. We have one of the like the original joysticks, but we have some other ones that are more like ergonomic.
Yeah, it's funny. The old 2600s are actually getting to a point where it's hard to find a working one.
Yeah.
Because they've just like gotten so old. Mm-hmm. Like.
Well, that's why we're excited. It works. Like, my brother bought us a connector cable for it, a new cable, and an adapter, and it works. And so we have, like, the newer games that were still coming out in the 80s that we got. Now, my favorite game was Skydiver. And it turns out that's Matt's mom's favorite game, too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe, like, my mom, who doesn't ever play any video games, is like, I love that game with the Skydiver. And they were like, oh, my God, I love that game, too.
Because the best part is that, so the whole game is your plane flies by, and you have to jump out of the plane with your, and then at the right moment, open your parachute, and there's wind, which affects you, and then you have to land on your landing pad. But the trick is you have to beat the person you're playing against to the landing pad to get more points. And so what you could do is delay opening your parachute, because then when you're falling through space, you're falling faster. And then the little person like wiggles so funny. And then if you don't open your parachute in time, you splat on the ground. It just makes this like screech, like this little squishy sound when you smush. It's so funny. And his mom loved it for the same reasons.
It's a cool game. Like we played it on the Greatest Hits DVD.
Yeah, I had gotten, so before we found the Atari, I had gotten a couple, what was it, for the PlayStation or something, or the Wii? I forget what it was for, but I got a couple of the Atari like Greatest Hits things. I think it was for PlayStation. Or maybe
Xbox. I think it was either PlayStation or Xbox. I love those collections, but I like having the original.
Yeah,
hardware.
I do too. It's more fun to have the original thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Like maybe when I retire, I can open up a museum of old technology.
Yeah,
because I find that stuff fascinating.
Yeah,
and one of the other games I've been playing is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
What's that?
So this is actually.
Is that like a group game? Like, do you play with other people?
PlayerUnknown's. This is like one of those things where it's like Sid Meier's, like where PlayerUnknown's is the developer.
Okay.
And they originally, it's almost like Hunger Games.
Okay.
It's like you have 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can either, they're all either single, or you can have teams of up to four.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, you're basically, you're on an airplane flying over this island, and then you can jump out wherever you want and kind of land. And then your goal is to just kill everybody else and be the last person alive, basically.
Right, okay.
Even if you don't kill anybody else, you want to be the last survivor.
Right.
And
now, is this originally, online game? Do you play with other people?
Yeah, it's all online.
So you're playing against live people.
It's all against other people. Yeah, okay. It's multiplayer only.
Okay.
But so originally, I guess PlayerUnknown started in the Arma 2, which is just a military game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a modification for Arma 2, and then the developer went and worked with this company that made this game called H1Z1, which was like similar to DayZ, which is like just open world survival multiplayer versus zombies.
Okay.
But you could also like kill other players and stuff. Mm-hmm. So H1Z1 made a game called King of the Kill, okay, which was the same type of 100-person battlegrounds.
Oh, okay.
And people were playing that for a while, but then this game came out, mm-hmm, and basically the developer had some bad experiences with H1Z1.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're like, we're going to make our own game all from the ground up, and it's early access now. And I've been playing it with my friends, and, you know, I haven't like played any of the other battleground games before, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying playing with my friends.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always nice to be able to hang out with.
I mean, some people like playing it solo. I haven't really tried playing it solo, but I probably wouldn't have bought this game on my own if my friends weren't playing it a lot.
Right.
But it's really well done. And, you know, you can play a lot of rounds and just die over and over again, but it's not really frustrating because, like, you die and you just click a button, you're playing again.
Oh, okay. That's good. Yeah.
It's not bad. I recommend turning off the in-game voice chat or setting it to team only because people on the internet are terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And
I don't like, that's why I don't like play
hearing
online games like
people
that
scream at me as they kill me. But,
oh, my gosh. Yeah.
No. But, no, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's more... Apparently it's more realistic than the H1Z1 version was, and
okay,
because like I guess in the H1Z1 like the way vehicles worked were kind of like unreal, like you couldn't run people over in H1Z1, but this one you can run people over.
The horror!
And if you crash in a vehicle at high speed, you'll die. So it's not like you,
that makes more sense.
Because like in H1Z1, you would just ride around and you'd get like a cop car or something, and you would keep that the whole game, and you'd just be like riding around with it, and you'd be like coming across a field at 80 miles an hour, and then you jump out at 80 miles an hour and start shooting at somebody. You can't do that in this game. Okay. So
yeah, that sounds more fun.
It's a little bit more realistic. I enjoy it. Play it with friends. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you don't play it with friends, it's not a bad game.
That's cool.
But yeah.
So I've gotten back into Rune Factory Tides of Destiny, which is for the Wii. Now, if you're familiar, that's with the Harvest Moon. It's the Harvest Moon series. It's like the sequels to Harvest Moon.
But they added combat,
dungeons,
right?
Yeah, they added combat and dungeons to Harvest Moon. So you still get some of the farming and stuff in there, but you get more story play. And you got me the Rune Factory game for DS, and one of them. There's several of them. I can't remember the name of this.
I think it was like the second or the third one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think the first one was a DS exclusive.
Yeah.
Or the one that got you was something only like on that. DS.
It was only on DS, yeah. So the Rune Factory, and I have another Rune Factory one actually for Wii. It's something different. I can't remember it. But anyway, this one is Tides of Destiny. It's one of the later ones. I really like it because there's a lot more free play than there was in the other one for the Wii. There's a lot of dungeons, and the story doesn't progress too quickly. Like, it doesn't let you beat the whole game in 3 days, you know, because part of unlocking the story play is that you have to build your friendship with the characters. And even when I'm talking to them every day and I'm giving them their favorite gifts every day, like, it's still not quickly upping my friendship level with them, which I kind of appreciate because that makes me enjoy the game more because it just makes me go a little bit slower. But I've gotten pretty far in that game. I'm up to like the Wind Spirit Shrine, which is the fourth one.
Sounds like reminds me of Legend of Zelda game for the DS. Yes. Did you ever play that one?
I didn't play it for the DS. I played it on the Nintendo 64.
I have it if you ever want to check it out. It's like you're like sailing and you go from like different islands and stuff.
Yeah, you know what? It is a lot like Zelda in that aspect, except you also have the farming mixed in with it. But yeah, it does exactly reminds me of that because it's like you're kind of in your own little free world where you can make your own choices about what you do every day and where you go and so I'm having a lot of fun with it. So I had set it down for a while because I guess I got a little bored with it, and then I had gotten into Stardew Valley, which you got me for Christmas, and then, you know, I kind of played that one. I didn't beat it yet, but I played it till like I got a little bored with it, and so then I picked up my Harvest Moon games again, and then I got a little bored with the Harvest Moon games, so now I picked up Rune Factory again. So you know, I'm cycling through them, and it's making me have more fun with them to cycle through a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah. I've been playing my Lego Lego Batman more too for the Wii.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoy that game because I try playing the Lego games and I just get too frustrated.
I know. I started playing the Lego games before I met you, which is probably a good thing because you were not home to hear all my cursing at the screen because I didn't know about walkthroughs before I met Matt. So I got the Lego, it was the Star Wars, all six of the movie games in one disc. And I got it for the Wii because I had just gotten my Wii like 5 years after it came out or 10 years after it came out. I don't know. I got the Wii right after the Wii U came out.
Yeah.
So I could buy games.
It's but, like those traditional adventure games where it's like you've got to click on this one thing at this one time. And like
Lego is,
you spend like an hour like clicking everything in the level trying to figure out what you missed.
Exactly. But I will say for some of the Lego games, once you kind of get how the games work, you kind of know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So I'm having less frustration already with the Batman game because having... you know, spent so much time with frustration and no idea that walkthroughs and hints on the internet existed. I'm not that tech savvy.
Yeah, once you kind of get there.
Once you kind of get how the game works, right, exactly. Yeah. Then it's kind of like, you're like, oh,
you kind of understand how the devs build their game.
Exactly.
It makes a little bit easier
so
to
it's kind of
out.
Like, okay, I know I need to find this puzzle. I know I haven't done this yet. I know this is kind of the thing I'm looking for. But it's nice though with the Batman too, because when I get too frustrated now, I just look up the hint because I just am like, you know what? I'm playing this for fun. I'm not playing this to feel some sense of satisfaction that I have figured every single thing out on my own. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to cheat just for the sake of cheating. But when I get frustrated and stuck, that's when I look
up. If you spend 10 or more minutes on one, yeah, trying to figure out one thing.
Exactly.
It ceased to be fun at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly. When just, it's not fun anymore, that's when I look something
mind-numbingly
up. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to say that with going back to Rune Factory, this is the best one where I haven't had to look anything up on how to do something or beat a puzzle.
Yeah.
Because in the other games, it was kind of that you have to do this very specific thing at this very specific time or this isn't going to happen. And like with Harvest Moon, some of it wasn't explained that well how to do things. But with this one, even though, and this is the first one I got, and so I hadn't even played any other games at this point, but it's like you really can figure out what you need to figure out just from the game, which I think is great. I think it's like, oh, this is like their high school graduation. You know, the first ones were maybe like the elementary school level,
yeah,
when they're first learning how to program their games and stuff like that. And this one is very sophisticated. So I really recommend Rune Factory, Tides of Destiny.
That was like the first one you got
it
out
was.
Of the whole
mm-hmm.
series.
It was
wasn't
the first
it?
One I got out of the whole series.
I know you got it for the Wii.
And I didn't even know there was a series
at
first.
You thought it looked like my World of Warcraft game. So you were like, oh, this looks like that. Maybe I'll like it.
Yeah, well, I've never played World of Warcraft, but I was like, oh, I know Matt likes that, and it looks fun. And I was like, well, there's animals, and there's farming, and there's some battles. I think I'll like this. And I loved it. And then I found out there's like this whole series, so I'm still collecting all of the Harvest Moon and Rune Factory games. I don't have them all yet.
Oh, I wanted to talk about this last week, but so Nintendo announced that they will no longer be making the NES Mini.
So
and they told, and basically what they said was, well, we never planned for this to be an ongoing thing. And
explain to people who might not know what the NES Mini
is. So the NES Mini is basically a miniature Nintendo console.
Original Nintendo console.
It came with 30 games
pre-programmed into it, so you don't need the cartridges.
And these were like some of the best games of the NES, like mm-hmm. Super Mario Brothers, Metroid, Legend of Zelda,
mm-hmm.
Zelda 2, Kirby Adventure, Donkey Kong, like mm-hmm. all like we're talking about like some of the greatest games on
right.
the system. And I right. wanted it merely for its collection of games.
Yeah.
And it was $60. And basically, it's been unavailable since it came out. I'm not a person who's going to wake up at 8 in the morning to go sit in line for 3 hours at a Best Buy.
Or 3 a.m. to wait for the truck to
come in. My original plan was I'm going to wait till
they get some
produced and there's enough out there. I can go pick one up.
Right. You don't have to
pre-order
it
or get it on Amazon or something. And then they, you know, here we go, 6 months of this thing being constantly unavailable.
And so many people still want it.
And basically... Their whole thing says, well, you know, we ship more, check with local retailers about availability. It's like That's like a big F you to all your fans that want this product. And now totally. The only way to get it is to buy it from a scalper for like $200.
It's or like, more, like $350, $400. Because now that they announced they're discontinuing the prices have shot up.
At this point, it's almost cheaper to go buy the original cartridges than to buy this thing.
Yes.
Because scalper, and that's the thing. Now it's so ridiculous. Now, because they've underproduced it, it's now a collectible. Mm-hmm. And its price will only go up. Mm-hmm. So, it's so frustrating that Nintendo has done this repeatedly. This is not a one-off thing for Nintendo. And now there's rumors that they're making an S, a Super Nintendo Mini, which I hope they don't. Just I don't understand why they did this. Like, they can just keep making them. They still make the little mini Genesis consoles. I can get that for $50.
Yeah. You know, no, it's just so maddening because so many people want it, and I think it's just really cruel to stop production of it when there's such a huge demand for it.
I mean, they probably could have made 100 million of these and sold them.
Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah. Like this was, and these were people that are not going to, and so one of the arguments I hear from people that are like kind of trying to play devil's advocate for Nintendo, and they're like, well, maybe they don't want people to, they don't want it to compete with the Switch market because the Switch is going to have those games available through their store.
And well, I'm like, the Wii had those games available through its store.
Yeah, and I'm like, the people that want this product are not necessarily, like, I want one because I love the original Nintendo. I'm never going to buy a Switch. Yeah. We might get one for you eventually. But
don't say it like that. Well, that sounded very derogatory, but we might get one for you eventually. Well,
like, how often do I play the Wii?
I know. He doesn't really like Nintendo, though. I love my Wii. And honestly, I don't really want a Switch if I got... Actually, I don't know. I don't want a Switch, and I don't actually even want a Wii U. I'm really happy just with my Wii.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like,
I loved a lot of the Nintendo 64 games.
I'm a classic Nintendo fan. I love the NES. I love the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I never had an N64, but I would like to get one.
Oh, me and Dan had one. Dan's my brother growing up, and we loved it. We would play Mario Kart together. I loved Mario 64. Donkey Kong 64 was the best game ever. Yeah, and
the last Mario Kart re-released
that because of licensing issues. So you have to get an original cartridge.
The last
to play
Mario
it.
Kart that I played was on Super Nintendo, and that was my favorite.
Well, that was the first one. And that was pretty awesome. And then when you got to the 64 one, oh my gosh, it was so good.
But it's like,
but no, I like
people
N64
that want this product that
it.
Are never going to buy a Switch. I'm never going to buy a Switch.
Right.
But I want this because I love the original Nintendo system. I would love to have one of those like complete NES collections. I never will because I just don't have the money or the patience
to put
into that kind of collecting. But like, this is such a great product for somebody like me who wants to play all those classic games.
Right.
Like,
play the games.
Like Balloon Fight and,
and like with the classic controller too. Because like we can get a lot of those games. Now, I don't know if they shut the Wii store down. They shut a lot of the Wii features down on the original Wii. Like you used to be able to get online and do all this stuff with the Wii and you can't anymore. But you were able to buy a lot of the original Super NES and N64 games on the Wii.
Nintendo's been really bad about their recent way that they handle, like, there's still no unified store across, so like if you buy something on one Wii, you can't move it to another Wii, or you can't like log into an account and download it because you bought it.
No, but I think you can transfer it to a memory card and have it on
that's
the memory
such
card.
An archaic way of handling digital purchases.
Well, yeah,
like,
it's a little...
everyone else in the world has figured, like, Steam, even like EA's platform, Amazon, every other place you buy a digital product, you can log into your account and download it to a new device.
Well, you know what's funny is because I bought my Wii on eBay like years and years after it had come out.
Did it
the
come
one
with
I got
a bunch?
Yes, it has a whole bunch of games that they had already bought that were on the Wii. So I was happy about that. I was like, score!
You know, we should check that other Wii that I got and see if it has any games on it.
Oh, yeah, we should see if it has any.
I picked up a Wii for like $10 or $30 or something. And I bought it just because it came with the HD cable for it.
Well, it had all the controllers.
It had a bunch of controllers. It was like a whole thing.
And my Wii had stopped working at one point, and mine was one of the Wiis where you could play the GameCube games on it as well as the Wii games.
Yeah, and what
and
had
Matt
happened
replaced
was
something on mine.
So I your DVD drive died, and I replaced the DVD drive. And the problem, the thing is, I didn't notice when I bought the replacement that it specifically said it would not play the GameCube games.
Because it plays the actual disc of the GameCube.
So the drive that you buy has to be compatible with GameCube games for it to work. So when I replaced it, it wouldn't play the GameCube games. Mm-hmm. So that's why I got the new one that actually will play GameCube games. Because I was looking at, I wanted to play the Metroid games on GameCube, and I was looking into it, and I found out that to get like the component cable for GameCube was like $150.
What?
Yeah, because like they didn't make a lot of them, and only one company made them or something.
Jeez.
But what you can do is you can get a Wii that'll play GameCube games and use component cables are like $10 for for the Wii.
I mean the GameCube controllers plug into the Wii.
Yeah, they plug
into its own controller, but it plugs into the Wii. It's the same outlet to plug it in.
Yeah, you know, like. Man, if Nintendo had better business practices about all this stuff, I would be ready to be a fan of theirs again. But
yeah,
which is like that, and like the way that they keep hassling people that put up game reviews and stuff on YouTube.
Really?
They've got this policy where like if you're not a partner of theirs, they will claim your videos if you use any kind of game, even if you're like doing a review and it's legit fair use. Like, They will claim your videos, and you won't be able to make any money off of them.
Oh,
even if it's like, you know, like you're doing commentary or criticism or whatever, they don't care. They'll just claim
That's
it.
That's mean.
Yeah, it's kind of an archaic.
I mean, they could probably fight that in court, but then who's got the money for lawyers and all that stuff? Exactly.
Yeah, the thing is, you could make a case of it in court, but Nintendo's gonna out-lawyer
you. They have more money.
You.
Exactly. And exactly.
It's you know.
That's just mean. That's just mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's their kind of thing, because like discontinuing the NES Mini, that's also mean-spirited. It's just another example of
they don't understand the current environment that games exist in.
And they don't appreciate their customers.
Yeah, cuz like
appreciate their fans.
You look at a game like the PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, like this is a developer that understands that their community is very important to them.
Mm-hmm,
like they've got for a lot of people that stream this game, they've got special features that they can use where they can have like customizable games and stuff. And this feature is only really available to the streamers, But that they'll, you know, and they support that, and because they know the more people they get watching their games on Twitch, the more games they're going to
buy
sell.
Their game. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, the more money people are going to spend.
Exactly. Like, you know, that reminds me of like, this is not related to games, but it's the same kind of practice of like appreciating your fans. Like, there was this morning talk show that did this live cam thing at gas station pumps. And so it would like surprise people at the pump because there's actually a camera there. And then they would like interact with the people and have them sing some karaoke. So this guy sings Living on a Prayer because he loves Bon Jovi. And then his wife sings Sweet Dreams. And everybody just went crazy for this guy singing because his voice was amazing. And so later, they're on like Jay Leno that night and stuff like that because everybody, it went viral, you know. And then John Bon Jovi himself makes a little video for them and says, "I am so excited that you guys had so much fun singing my song. Thanks for being fans." You know, he wasn't like an a-hole and was like, "Hey, you didn't get my permission to use my song on your show." You know what I mean? Like, he was like, "Wow, that's so awesome. I love my fans. Good for you." And that's kind of like, and then everybody loved him more. And they were like, "Oh, that's why we love Bon Jovi. They're so awesome to their fans." And, you know, look at him interacting with the fan and making a response to video to that. Like, and that's kind of how Nintendo needs to be, you know?
Yeah. I think part of it is, I think it's kind of the culture in Japan, too. Like,
well, I don't know enough about Japanese culture to speak to that.
Well, they're a very traditional Japanese company. And they kind of like made their success in the 80s by being kind of devious and like they really blocked a lot of other consoles at the time, kind of arguably illegally too, by having all these exclusive deals where no third party developers could develop for other systems. So
I don't really know anything about that, so I can't comment for or against that. But
yeah, I mean, anyone who's like,
so it was like if somebody made a game for Nintendo, they weren't allowed to work for anybody
one
else.
One thing that
later,
really caused Sega Master System to kind of fail was like no third party developers could really make any games for them. In fact, one developer had to create a new company just to make games for Sega.
So wait, you're saying that if they developed games for Nintendo, it was like they weren't really
Nintendo,
third party at all. It was like they were exclusive Nintendo developers.
Nintendo
then
had this thing where if in order to develop games for the NES,
it was
they
like
couldn't make games for anybody else.
Even different games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they were kind of like licensed exclusively to Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not necessarily illegal. You don't have to sign a contract like that, but...
Yeah, but like back then they were so big you had to have your games on the NES.
Right, you know? And then it was like, well, who else that you can't... Right, because then it's like if you only make one game or they only hire you for one game, then what? You can't go make other games? I mean, yeah, that's kind of hard. So yeah, mean-spirited.
I'll put a link to
and I'm gonna find a link of that guy doing the Bon Jovi thing because that was crazy cool. Yeah. Oh, I will find it because I know I liked it on Facebook when it happened. It was a couple years ago, but I just thought that was awesome. That's exactly the kind of way you want to interact with your fans and build a fan base, and that's who you want to be. So shout out to John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, yeah. If you make video games.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to your fans.
Exactly.
Appreciate your fans.
Yeah, they're the ones buying your games.
Allow them to effectively make content for your game.
Right.
It's okay to let them make some money off your game. Like,
right.
You're all going to make money. Just let them do it.
Oh, like, remember there was something with Star Trek where they were making like a fan film and Star Trek Paramount has been trying to shut it down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I think there was getting into some issues, though, where they were paying people to appear in it. So I think they were kind of getting into gray zone legal issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't just pay people to be in a film that's based. Like, it's one thing if it's completely amateur and nobody's getting paid. You know what I mean? And it's just a fan fiction thing. But if you're paying actual real actors to be in your actual Star Trek movie, like, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at what point is it like they're going to release it in theaters and make money off of it?
Right. Exactly. So that kind of gets into
it's
licensing
like
issues.
If it gets too popular, they have to step in and be like,
you can't
do this.
And
because they have to protect their
IP. Happened with Paramount, or I don't know if Paramount still owns it, but that's what happened with Star Trek is that exactly. It's like when you're paying famous actors, even though you crowdfunded it, you're paying famous actors. Yeah. And then I think the producer or director may have also been paying himself a salary from the crowdfunding, which also made it a big issue. Yeah. So, like, you can't take money for fan fiction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
so one last thing I wanted to mention. Did you see they announced the date for the new Indiana Jones movie?
I did not. And you know what? I have not seen Crystal Skull either.
Well, don't. It's terrible.
So why are we excited about the new Indiana Jones? Well, is it Harrison Ford?
Harrison Ford, but
it is.
More importantly, it's Lucas will not be involved.
Oh.
Because that got sold to Disney, too.
Okay.
Because I know the Crystal Skull, apparently...
was it bad?
Like Harrison Ford and Spielberg
uh-huh.
had one idea of what they wanted it to be. And Lucas kept wanting to put in the weird alien stuff into it.
Oh.
And that was the part of the movie that just really went off the deep end. Like, it was just like these weird interdimensional aliens. And it was like,
not Indiana Jones.
That was the whole thing. It wasn't.
Like Star Wars. Don't combine your universes, George Lucas. Come on now.
That's just George Lucas.
Yeah. Being George Lucas.
Yeah. Being George Lucas.
Basically, right. Because when he's not on a short chain, I think he has problems with his creation editing.
I mean, it'll be interesting seeing a 70-year-old Indiana Jones.
Well, Harrison's still looking pretty good. He's fit, and he keeps in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely...
It's kind of cool. He'll get to be like his dad in Last Crusade. Now he's become the grumpy old man.
just get him and Sean Connery just being grumpy together.
Is Sean Connery still alive? He is, right?
Huh.
They should get Sean Connery to be in it. I would love to see that. Like him in a nursing home or something, and then something happens. It could be kind of like Bubba Hotep. Did you see Bubba Hotep?
Yeah. they can do like one of those one last heist for the old people movies.
Yeah, exactly. And now he has a kid too, right? In the new movie, he had a kid, so they could.
Yeah, but it was Shia LaBeouf, though.
Who's that? Oh no, I hate him. Yeah. That's who it was.
Yeah,
I can't stand the ridiculousness of his real life.
That was back. That was back when Shia LaBeouf was being put in every movie for some reason.
Because he was in Transformers, right?
Yeah, it was around the same time.
The first Transformers, so he kind of got big, and then he started being totally ridiculous in his real life. And I just cannot stand watching him anymore.
I never understood why he was a thing in the first place.
Oh.
Like, I never liked him when they were putting him in movies. And I kept saying, like, why are you putting him in all these movies?
Right.
He's not really that. He's not charismatic. He's not likable. He's just kind of like a spoiled little kid. Like. And that was kind of the characters he played.
Yeah.
I just never got.
Maybe they could just recast his kid or just not have his kid.
Or maybe he died from cancer.
Baby, don't say that. That's horrible. That's horrible.
Died from the
aliens.
Else.
Maybe he got abducted by the aliens.
Maybe he just disappeared. Maybe they just don't talk about it.
They could just do what I want them to do with the Star Wars prequels and just pretend they never happened. Kind of like they did with the Superman reboot when they pretended like Superman 4 never happened.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Superman Returns.
Superman Returns was supposed to be a direct sequel to Superman 2.
That's what I'm saying. Just pretend those didn't happen and rewrite the universe. That's what needs to happen. So.
Yeah.
But are we about at the end of our show?
Yeah, I think that's we're gonna wrap
it up.
We've
had a lot of nerd chatter today.
Yeah, we had a lot to talk about today.
Yeah.
Next time we'll be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy because that'll be coming out next weekend.
Comes out this weekend. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Should be good.
Yep.
Maybe if you see the trailer for Thor Ragnarok, we can talk about that.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet because I don't like to watch
it. I have a feeling
trailers.
It's going to be in front of Guardians of the
Galaxy.
That's
true, so I probably will end up seeing it against my will.
But that's how trailers are.
I know. You can't escape them.
So, all the show notes will be at thenerdyrat.com.
Yep.
If you enjoy the podcast and you feel like helping us out, feel free to donate to one of our charities that we support.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly help us out. It helps the rats out.
If you want to support the podcast,
that's
we don't make any money off this.
We don't make money, but support our charities.
If you want to support the podcast, support our charities.
Yes.
It's Small Angels Rescue in Frederick County and Extra Life.
Which Extra Life supports Children's Miracle Network for Children's Hospitals.
All money goes to care for children at in the Children's Miracle Network hospitals.
Mm-hmm. And Small Angels Rescue is a nonprofit no-kill volunteer organization that rescues and rehomes gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, and rats. And they're the one that we work with.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for listening.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.